If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to another Motor1.com Test Car Happy Hour, and also this week in InsideEVs.com Test Car Happy Hour. We've got electric vehicles, we've got gasoline-powered vehicles, we have editors of all stripes from all around the country. It's a full house, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. Say hello to senior editors Brett T. Evans and Jeffrey Perez, and managing editor Brandon Turkus down in the corner for me. Guys, it's the week before a holiday week. Let's quickly, big holiday plans. What's everybody doing over the 4th?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Blowing shit up.
Okay. Mr. Turkus is going to explode some stuff with, I'm sure, very legal fireworks. I know we've got cars to talk about from last week, but is everybody driving something cool over the holiday weekend? I know I'm very excited to be cruising throughout Boston and Maine up in the Northeast in a brand new Toyota Sienna with my whole family. I think it's going to be a lovely time.
Hell yeah.
Love the Sienna.
Yeah, fun times.
I got a Lexus RZ coming.
Ooh.
Yoke? Yes, yoke? No yoke?
I don't know. We'll see.
Do they all think the yoke is federalized yet.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Let's just strap a yoke on it. Let's just pull the airbag and the OEM wheel and put a Model S yoke on it. No.
Okay. Incriminate yourself today, Seth.
I know. I'm really firing on all cylinders right now. Just kind of waiting for the numbers to come jump up. All right, guys, we've got a full house. We have got at least 4 cars to talk about this week. I'm going to go ahead and start because I have, I think, the one pure electric, and I know that no. Is that wrong?
Mine's like
it. Oh, okay. Never mind. Well, then I will. I'll still start because I'm curious to hear everybody's takes on my Mercedes-Benz EQ 250 Plus SUV. And I think this is actually kind of the hero color for it. I was looking on the manufacturer website or the consumer facing website, and they have it in the same trim. So this is the. This is the more inexpensive of the two, single motor, 188 horsepower. It's 250-ish or a little bit lower than that pound feet of torque. 245 miles of range. And I'll be honest, you guys, this may be my very favorite EQ product to drive so far. Partially because I think it makes a lot of sense. It feels like a super easy commuter vehicle. My wife has been gone, so I've been doing like grocery runs, kid runs, things like that. For a small vehicle, I think it's a fantastic size. As you can see, like there's a reasonable amount of storage. I've got the car seats in the back. I have no problem with space for myself. And even though the 0-60 time, I think Mercedes lists this as a 0-60 time of 8 seconds or something. That's pretty slow these days. It feels really quick in traffic, right? So it's doing that great EV thing where it feels kind of punchy and like you're able to kind of get where you need to get. However, and I brought this up in chat yesterday.
Wrong.
I do think it's the single ugliest Mercedes EQ product so far. And yes, you all disagree. So let's have at it.
It's adorable. It's totes adorbs, as the kids say.
Do you like the GLB, Seth?
No, not a lot. I don't, so
there it is, because it doesn't change enough from the GLB. You get the dumb black plastic face, but otherwise it's just a GLB, which I think is adorable and charming and amazing. So there's
it's not even the face for me, though, just to like set the stage. It's the fact that it's got such an upright stance, even though it's obviously like been aero optimized. You can't really see it. Kyle, maybe if you have a second, maybe you can grab like a still photo or a profile or something, because the glass house is really tall relative to the overall kind of height of the vehicle. And so to me, it's got that kind of like baby buggy, sort of dorky stance to it that I just don't dig. The detailing is fine.
But that's carryover from the GLB, and you just said you don't love the GLB. So, you know, makes sense that you wouldn't like this car very much.
Yeah.
I mean, so the thing that I like about the EQB and the GLB design in general is that it's the best marriage of like the curvy, soft, swoopy Mercedes SUV design with like more of that like upright, tough nature that you would get on a G-Wagon. And I think it really does something unique in the lineup that I wish more Mercedes products would do. And it, in a lot of ways, it kind of reminds me of the original GLK, especially in the body sides. And I appreciate the hell out of it. The EQB is not the most attractive version of it. I think the GLB 35 is pretty darn nifty. But no, in general, I really, really dig the look of this car. I think I'm bummed that yours, I had one of these about a year ago thereabouts. And it was also a very boring color. They sell it in that amazing rose gold. That is just one of the coolest colors on the market.
That's the color to get.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe a little color sensitive. You're right. Like being so tall and bright white, like that can be a little bit rough, but
I'm with Brandon though. The GLB 35 looks great. I think the EQB looks pretty good too. Like I really like just the boxy aesthetic that you get. I mean, the Bronco Sport, like a lot of smaller SUVs these days are going with the boxy thing. And I like that. And it's like actually interesting instead of the rest of the EQ models that kind of just look like runny eggs. And I think that's actually a good thing. So I don't know. I like it a lot.
So we've got a couple of comments real quick. Kyle Connor, Inside EVs, friend of Inside EVs, Inside EVs podcast host and all around EV superstar, Kyle Connor says, what do I think of the charging performance? Kyle, unfortunately, I did not have a deep charging performance experience with it. My just moved houses do not have a home charging setup. So the charge plan for all EVs right now is for me to walk 3 blocks from my house and plug it into a 6 kilowatt charger in a public parking garage while I sit here and work. So I have to go back and look at my receipts, but maybe 17 kilowatts or something, letting it charge for the day at a real slow level. And other than that, did not deplete the battery down below half in the cal that I'm driving it. In the time that I'm driving it, not the cal that I'm driving it. Perfectly adequate. Although that is honestly one of the things that strikes me about this vehicle and the overall package for the price, right? So the one that I have as it sits is just under $60,000, which in and of itself is, you know, maybe a little bit of sticker shock for people out there who have been shopping in the small SUV crossover segment. But it starts at 52. It's not that's not a crazy price hike over what people are paying for things in this segment that are non-premium, let alone electric. So I think that overall, this is a vehicle that a lot of people can afford. And with 200-ish, you know, 240 is the spec, but let's say just being very conservative, 200-ish miles of range, I think that it's going to fulfill the needs of a lot of drivers, certainly in the suburbs, urban environments right now. So,
well, and even the 4MATIC EQB 300 and 350 also have more than 200 miles of range, EPA rated. So, you know, you can get all-wheel drive, and those offer third-row seats. You could have an all-wheel drive, 7-seat electric vehicle for, you know, about 60 grand. Really not
it's
terrible.
Not really 7 seats.
I know, I'm aware, but neither is a EQS SUV. It's not really a 7-seater SUV.
Yeah.
This is like a solid emergency use third row of seats if you need it, or if you've got little kids that you occasionally drive to school, you know, like, I'm just going to say that it's like a pretty screaming deal for the range, for the performance, and the fact that you can get all-wheel drive and a third row of seats.
And a really nice, like, for a lower-priced Mercedes, you guys, I think we've talked about this before on the podcast, like, I like the suite of technology, the kind of balance of technology and, like, luxury equipment that you're getting here, right? You're getting some of those really nice Mercedes touch points, not everywhere. It's not EQS or S-Class level or anything like that. Very nice to live with. One of my favorite versions of Mercedes infotainment, where it's slimmed down a bit, but it still has all the functionality that I really need on a daily basis. yeah, overall, again, like I think that you're getting a lot, including that Mercedes brand, if that's important to you, for definitely under $60,000, pretty well equipped. I don't know if I'd call that a smoking deal, but it's certainly not bad at all. So,
well, and I just appreciate how well it transitions from gas to electric. I think that you know, we're finally in an era where you aren't making huge sacrifices by buying a car that's available in both ICE and EV versions. This car and then its main competitor, the XC40 Recharge, is a great example of that too. Just like very charming in both their gasoline and electric versions.
So let's catch up real quick because we have a couple of other comments. Producer Kyle threw out there, is this the ugliest EQ product? Eric Nefron said, no, that would be the EQS. I think that there's definitely been some discussion both on this podcast and at the world at large about that being an unattractive vehicle. Mark Burston gave us a pukey face. And then Dave Kruger. Yeah, thank you, Kyle. Dave Kruger said, I've got an EQB 350 right now. Seems like a decent charger, but nothing special. Very reliable, around 100 kilowatts and a nice flat curve. At least 80 kilowatts up to 75% or so, which is nice. Not having those big spikes, reliable, explicable kind of charging performance is something that, especially over time, owners are going to care about. And then should we also hit the next one from Eric Nefron? Ioniq 5, EV6, and Model Y. This thing doesn't measure up well to those cars. I think that's really fair, right? I would say that for Ioniq 5 and EV6, obviously you're taking a hit, quote unquote, in terms of the brand or the brand prestige, probably overall, you know, when you really start to get into the weeds again of like overt quality of stuff that you're touching and using, a little bit lower. But I can't say that I wouldn't prefer to live with an Ioniq 5 or own an Ioniq 5 over this. What about you guys?
Yeah, I was going to say the EV6, I think is pretty premium inside. Like it doesn't really have a lot of flimsy materials. I can't say that I've driven the EQB, but I remember the GLB having a few cheap materials, like cheaper than usually what you expect from Mercedes. So I think it's a fair equivalent a little bit. And I think both of those cars are better on the EV6 and the Ioniq 5 are a little better with charging and range and stuff too.
Well, I think they're better EVs. For me personally, and I'm a bit of a brand snob. I just straight up like the EQB. It's a very nice, very pleasant car to drive. I think the ride quality is a little bit more refined than you would get in the Hyundai or the Kia. And again, there's no real substitute for that three-pointed star on the nose.
That's true.
And you can get it in rose gold. You can't get any others in rose gold. If Hyundai would listen to me and give that car the color palette it deserves, then it might be a different story.
Yet again, Hyundai is not listening to Brandon, and I just don't think it's fair. So with that, why don't we switch, Brandon? Why don't we switch to the car that you've got this week and stay electric, as it were?
Yes. I have been driving a very adorable little thing that I actually hated the first time that I drove it, the Mini Cooper SE. I am, for those that don't know, I'm a longtime Mini owner and a longtime Mini ignorer. I have one and I haven't driven it in about 10 years, but the first time I drove this car was at the launch in Miami. And generally when automakers launch cars in Miami, it's just a statement that we think this car is bad or it doesn't handle that well, or it's not that exciting. Especially for a car like Mini, where like the handling is like a huge part of the experience.
Sure.
You know, the range in this thing is not very great. I don't think I ever saw more than about 107 miles on a full charge. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fair point of criticism, but I have a home charger. I rarely need to go more than 20 miles from home. And I had no range anxiety during my time with this car. I charged it up twice over the course of a week. Very, very, you know, easy charging experience. Just plugged it in at the side of my house and came out the next morning to a fully charged battery. Performance is sprightly. It is a single electric motor, front wheel drive, and it zips along just fine. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me for Mini, but I want to say it's nearly as quick to 60 as a Cooper S, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really wowed me about this was every time I get into a car, I reset all the trip and all that stuff just to get an idea of the metrics. This thing was doing like 4 miles to the kilowatt hour, which is about a mile and a half more than most other EVs that I've tested, most bigger, heavier EVs. So yeah, it you know, it did a lot with the kilowatt hours that it had. And I did kind of soften after a week of driving it. It is still kind of fun to chuck around. The steering is still responsive. It delivers not as much of that mini experience as I would like, but mm-hmm. it's definitely acceptable.
What's the price on that?
Ooh, the price on that. That would have required me to do my homework and actually look it up. I want to say
30 something, just over 30,
this,
right?
This one was the range topping trim, and it was, as I try to log into all of the things, I want to say it was about $35,000 before any tax credits or anything like that. So,
but you say it kind of preserves some of that like friskiness that minis have.
Yeah, I mean, again, not as much as I want because there is no defeating physics. It's a heavy car.
Mm-hmm.
$36,700 is the one that I had, and it was fully loaded. The one big drawback, and I didn't mention this when I had a Clubman a few weeks ago as well. The one big drawback is Mini is absolutely terrible about offering active safety equipment. Absolutely terrible. This did not have adaptive cruise control. It did not have blind spot monitoring. I don't think it had a lane keep system on it. It, you know, this is 2023, guys, and like this, you're selling an EV, and you know that they need to do better. Like Mini in general needs to do better on the active safety front. Because yeah, they're not competitive right now, and that might be, in my opinion, the biggest reason to avoid buying a Mini is until they get with the program and offer some of the broader active safety equipment that you can get on BMWs. It's just not a great buy.
So is it? I mean, $36,000 for 110, 100. I think it's like 130 miles of like rated range or something like that. So we could be real generous and say that $36,000, not really much in the way of active safety or driver assistance. Is this any more than just a compliance car?
I mean, I think that would be a valid question if we're talking about an independent manufacturer, but they're part of BMW. BMW's got a lot of EVs. So does Mini need a compliance car? I don't have the answer to that. It does feel like it. I think it also like a bit of a calculated play on Mini's part until I got to be very careful about what I say because I just learned a whole bunch about Mini's future plans.
No, embargo spoilage. Yes.
Yeah, which you'll find all of that out in the next couple months. You know, I think it's more of a stopgap than a compliance car. If we really want to get into semantics, there is more stuff coming. Some of it's not exactly secret, and I think there'll be more competitive range and performance at that point.
So in a weird way, I think, and Dominic Yoni just posted to the chat a really good note, you guys, that Inside EVs forum has a large Mini Cooper SE owners community. If anybody wants more info or just to dive into the ownership experience, that's a great place to do it. Thanks for that, Dom. I don't know. Compliance car is weird. And actually, like, we're looking at B-roll from Mini, right, from BMW of this car. And you can see that they're very intentionally sort of positioning it like in a line at the end there with the standard Mini of some sort. I don't think that's the Mini E, the original one, an i3 and then this, right? So I don't know about compliance car, but we're definitely at a stage where like a brand like Mini needs to have an electric car, right? Like they need to start breaking ground on that. But I go back to what you're saying about sort of the handling, Brandon, earlier and not being able to defeat weight. Like there are plenty of EVs that are rewarding to drive that have good handling and are still heavy. The problem with Mini, and I know that even the gas cars have been losing some of this, is that the magic was always like that combination of lightning fast steering, relatively lightweight, but also with the weight centered over the front wheels and a short wheelbase, you just had this rotational ability that was crazy, right? It was super fun. You always wanted to be on like an autocross in any kind of Mini Cooper. And I can't imagine you get that with the battery pack sort of keeping things more stable, but not in a positive way, right?
And that's the thing. It is incredibly stable. Like it feels far more neutral than less nervous than, you know, say my Mini, for example, which is a 2006, like the first generation new Mini. But in general, yeah, I agree. Like, the minis have gotten softer and less exciting, and I think this is the least exciting handler of the bunch today.
It's almost like you don't want it to have even weight distribution. You want it to be like very forward weight biased, so that you can get the rear wheels to just snap around when you lift off the throttle.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of those things that I know, like, you know, talking about it, like, I know you guys are going to care. I know people who have been mini owners in the past will care and understand what we're saying. But like, that's not a great growth plan in 2023 for how to build your small car. I think that maybe successor to the i3 is slightly closer to where BMW's target is right now. You know, kind of an EV urban runabout that has enough of the stuff that a modern driver needs that they'll be a little less disappointed, I guess, with the technology in the car. As Kyle is pointing out, I love the Mini SE, but it's old tech, right? I think that maybe that's a portion of what we're struggling with too. But gotta say it, because it's impossible for us to have one of these conversations without commenting heavily on the styling. Maybe the best wheels I've seen in the last couple of years. Certainly some of my favorite Mini wheels in a generation or two. I think those, what do we call them? They're not four spokes, four holes. Whatever.
The styling details on this are really, really great. The one that I had is chili red with that new trendy multicolor roof that they've been doing. So the electric yellow accents kind of stand out a little bit. But yeah, I mean, the detailing, the fun of the design or of the styling, you know, they're still nailing that. Mini is still on top of its game. I'm glad we're showing this shot of the plugging in. This is pedantic. When Mini first came back in the early 2000s, you could get a base car with like a normal fuel filler cap like that, or you could get some of the upmarket ones had like a really neat like chromed out example. And I've always thought that design looks very cheap and uninteresting. And yeah, so give me the chrome bit.
What's the scale on the inside of that charging flap? Anybody know?
Oh, I've no idea. I didn't look
maybe
at it.
Kyle knows. I've never noticed it before that exact shot. So can you get the green neon spaghetti charging cable?
I'm pretty sure that's the one that's included in the back. I've got a charger at home, so I never dug into the goodie bag.
Love it. Love it. I mean,
can I give my controversial opinion here?
Yeah, oh,
I usually
good.
Like to
oh,
do
good,
on these
good,
podcasts.
Good.
So I drove the SE hardtop for a minute, and it was fine. I drove the convertible prototype down here in Miami, which was pretty cool. Wasn't overly charmed by this car. Like, it's fun enough to drive. It looks cute. I think the cabin is pretty bad.
Worse than a normal Mini?
No. Most Minis, to me, have pretty bad cabins.
Did we get the disclaimer flashing on screen that Jeff is a noted BMW hater?
No, not all of them. That's why I missed the podcast last week.
We left you off the BMW podcast for a reason, Chris.
I know.
No, I'm kidding.
Anyways, so I just wasn't like super charmed by this car. And it's kind of weird to me that so many people are, I think, especially when a much better, equally bad on range EV exists in the Mazda MX-30.
Oh, get out. You're fired.
That I do love. That is so much nicer inside. Equally as good to drive, like about the same price, maybe a little more expensive, but I don't get it. I don't get the Mini craze when like the Mazda is equally good.
Someone needs to check if hell has frozen over, because I agree with Jeff on this one that the Mazda has a better interior. It's like maybe not more artfully. The Mini's interior looks so cute and it's so fun, but like the materials aren't great. At least the Mazda has like cork and fabric and wool in weird places. Like, so I'm going to give it credit for that. And then, yeah, I haven't driven the Mazda or the Mini for that matter, but I just don't totally understand. I don't understand the point of any $35,000 100-mile car in a world where the Bolt exists, where like, yes, it also has a kind of a cheap plasticky interior, but you're going more than 200 miles of range. You've got available Super Cruise all for like 38 tops. I really struggle with these low range, you know, old tech electric cars, as Kyle put it in the comments.
I just dropped a link to the wrongs. Well, actually, it's still a funny story, but it's about the what I was searching for is there's a company called the Little Car Company that makes like 75% scale replicas of like famous cars, and they've done some EVs that I think are hilarious and very well done and right in the same price point that we're talking about here. Or there's that one that you can click on, which is the a Bugatti, like a classic sort of Bugatti Monoposto, done a couple years ago as an electric children's car. That's also about $33,000. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's more usable than that. It seems like this is something that a limited number of people could own as a single car and have it be sort of a lifestyle car, just like a lot of other minis, but without some of the flexibility. So at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to win a ton of converts, but we hope that they continue to progress and get a little bit more of that like driving feeling, that brand DNA into a package that is recognizable and cute and has all the detailing that we love from Mini as well.
Well, just wait until September.
Yeah.
And to Mini's credit, it is only like a 38 kilowatt hour battery. So in terms of like efficiency, just energy efficiency, it's a fine auto, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know. Kind of a hard show.
There's your pull quote right there. A fine auto, I suppose.
A fine motoring experience. If that's
of all the cars, it's definitely one of them.
All right. So we've got a couple of comments here that weren't just from us. Dom again weighed in to say that the Mazda interior was definitely pretty decent. The rest of the car, though, .. I think we know what he means. Thank you. Thank you, Kyle, for quoting Brett there. Sam Wiener, thanks for watching, says the Mazda and the Mini are not serious electric cars. I think that there's a level of truth to that. I mean, certainly if folks from Mazda and Mini BMW were here, they would probably have a point to argue. But I think that the problem that we've identified, not just us, like most people who have tested them, is in the face of such strong competition and such a like rising standards, those offerings just kind of feel like they're outclassed even as brand new vehicles. What do we got? We got Apexer Man 1. As a Mini enthusiast, he says he's waiting for the next version. So Apexer Man, I would say, hold on. It sounds like Brandon, our man on the scene in Germany a couple of weeks ago, is going to have some stories on Inside EVs and Motor One that may reflect some of that. So stay tuned for those.
That is the most Mini enthusiast username. I love it.
I know, it's quite good. All right, on the sliding scale of electrification, I think that we've got Brett up next, right? Brett, in a car that we've spoken about several times, including last week, but let's hit her again. The much ballyhooed BMW XM.
Yes, and I said enough about it last week that I am going to mostly only talk positives today. They dropped it off in my driveway last night. I drove it all over, ran some errands in it. You know, took my boyfriend to run some of his errands too. Like, we just kind of spent the evening in the car, and I have to say, the interior is stellar, incredible, such a like cool, artful, neat looking interior. The rear seat is so comfortable. I couldn't believe how much space and how like much support you get. And it kind of like has this like split personality where, first of all, it's plug-in hybrid. You get about 31 or 32 miles of EPA rated range, I believe. And then it also has that 4-liter twin turbocharged V8. So the total power output is insane. Just like crazy amounts of power. But then it'll also do, you know, I was getting 30 miles per gallon average yesterday when I was just kind of driving around town because I was mostly using the electric motors, which have plenty of power. And then up front, you've got these big, heavily bolstered chairs with like the little light up M logo in the headrest and just very serious performance vehicle. And then in the back, you have this wide lounge seat where like the two outboard seats are angled in a little bit to kind of like have your passengers facing each other just a little bit. And you feel like you're kind of just sitting in this big, comfy living room. So it was kind of just like, it's just like this incredible study in contrast of, you know, high performance, but also grand touring and also very efficient. I found a lot more to like about it than I thought I was going to, you know, after driving it for a day.
Do people in the real world care about this car? Like, I know it's like online and on, you know, our websites and on our social media and stuff, we get a lot of like really strong feelings about it. Do people notice it at all?
I saw one yesterday, weirdly enough, all blacked out. And I didn't notice it was a BMW XM at first. I thought it was just an X7 or an X5 with sort of a, you know, a blacked out body kit. And then as I got closer, I was like, oh, that's a new XM. I have not seen one of those yet. So I don't know. It's a weird
like
a very one.
Miami car. Seems like a yeah. very Miami car. It's going to be replace the Gran Turismo as a Miami car.
I think I have a few BMW enthusiasts in my neighborhood, and they've kind of like, you know, one of them like waved at me as I drove past. The other one, I saw him through my living room window. I saw him like pointing at it when he was parking his car and getting out. So
Brett, I think they were waving at you to go away, and the other one was pointing at it, like, I can't believe someone parked that in the driveway.
This was my brother's comment when I posted it.
Oh, look at those lights!
Let's see the lights again, Kyle. Yeah, go,
rewind, Kyle.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic.
We had some M color LEDs circling the cabin. That's incredible. Yeah.
And that geometric headliner is so good too.
Oh, really
so
cool. Silly. Yeah.
So I've not driven one of these. The closest I've gotten, I did the prototype drive about a year and a half or almost two years ago now, a little over a year ago. But a few weeks ago when I was in Villa d'Este, my ride back from Lake Como to the Milan airport was an XM. It was bright red with gold. It was like the full Iron Man treatment. So I spent about an hour and 15 minutes in that back seat. It is excellent. It is, I mean, short of like an i7 or something like with a really elaborate back seat setup, I'm not sure there's a better back seat on the market right now. The bench is incredibly comfortable. The ride quality is appalling. It is super firm.
I mean, it, over anything, I was driving around my neighborhood at 15 miles an hour, and we just had our neighborhood resealed, our street resealed. And so, like, driving over, like, the transition between pavement and tar, you could feel that at 15 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
astounding.
We were on, like, Italian motorways, and even there, it was just, I mean, it wasn't so much that there was like an abundance of vertical motion. It's just, it was very, very stiff. And, you know, and I think run flat tires probably had something to do with it. I think the wheel size had something to do with it. I don't recall the prototype feeling quite as stiff when I drove it in Austria last year. But yeah, I was really taken aback at how firm it felt, relative to, what did I rode out there in an IX. So relative to the IX that I took on the way out there, it felt so much firmer.
So we just real quick, we've got George M. Gonzalez weighing in here. First of all, with a zinger saying, love the BMW designs, but that's a lease only vehicle. And then going hard after them on, unreliability, I suppose, but also raises the good point. Who in the world can afford the repairs?
If you can afford a $160,000 car, yeah.
So that's fair. I also think it's interesting, like, because he might not be wrong. Like, is this could be like a high dollar, BMW person's flavor of the month, or, you know, like lease of the quarter or something like that. I can see that. On the other hand, this should be like this is a very pedigreed vehicle, right? Like, this should be a one that we're talking about as being on Pebble Beach, on a Concours 50 years from now, right? Based on the fact that it's kind of the second ever M model, right? What do you guys think about that? Like, do we think that it has legs? Like, it's so outrageous now, these designs do tend to sort of settle into our brains and we feel a little bit differently about them years on. I just wonder whether or not this is actually important, or if they really are kind of tarnishing that pure M brand just a little bit.
First, I love your optimism that Pebble Beach will still exist in 50 years. I really enjoy that.
People have to drive their old cars somewhere.
But second, I'm not sure. I mean, the reason the original BMW M1 was such a groundbreaker is that it did something very interesting with design. And I think this is a little bit more iterative, and a little less unique. And I don't know, maybe we'll soften on it. I think back to like the fourth generation 7 Series, the first Bengal 7 Series, mm-hmm. Which everybody hated at the time, and I think it's aged actually really well. So it's possible that, you know, 10 years we'll look back on this and BMW will have come up out with something much worse, and we'll be like, hey, that's great. But I'm not really sure. I don't have a great answer, honestly.
First of all, I love the idea of in 50 years, Pebble Beach is going to be, you know, BMW XMs and Cullinans and big SUVs instead of the classics we have now, which is amazing to me. I like the XM a lot. I think I'm one of the few that really, really loves this thing. The design, I don't know. Something about the design doesn't have like a staying power to me. Like it's not cool enough. Like it's interesting, but it's not good looking or cool enough to have like this collectability. I don't know. That's sort of just my take on just what this car looks like. The interior is awesome, but something about the exterior just doesn't work for long term.
BMW in general right now has this really unpleasant lack of cohesion between its interior and exterior design. If you look at like the XM and the 7 Series and the iX, the cabins are all like, holy cow, these are gorgeous, like material quality, material choices, shapes and colors and all that stuff. They're really doing great things. And then you get to the exterior and it's just like, can we have a little bit of that interior class applied to the outside of the car?
Yeah, well, and there's so many other like constraints on exterior design these days too. But Brandon, I think you hit it when you said it's a little bit more iterative. It's also, of course, like an SUV shape, right? An SUV shape is something that we see every day, you know, 1,000 times every day when we're driving. So whether or not it will feel special in the larger landscape of SUV shapes, like in, you know, decades from now, I'm not really sure. Or if it will just kind of do what's happening a little bit now, which is like blend into the wallpaper just a bit. It's a fascinating car. I can't wait to get in one so we can do another round of these. But all right, let's ditch all the electric motors and let Jeff tell us about two throwback is the wrong word, but definitely advanced versions of dyno juice burning Audis, right?
Yeah,
high performance RS cars.
Yeah, so I just drove the Audi RS6 and RS7 Ooh. Performance out of Napa last week, and boy, those are some real good cars, tell you that much.
Real cars. You got it there first, folks.
So
look at that wagon. It's amazing.
I mean, it's beautiful. So good.
Yeah.
The thing that's interesting too is that just visually between the two, right? The RS7, which that review goes up tomorrow, so you can read that then. But the RS7 is a very, very, very good-looking car. But then when you put it next to the RS6, it's still like, oh, it's not as interesting or as, like, head-turning, you know, because the Avant is just so, like, crazy. But twin-turbo V8, 621 horsepower this year for both of them, 0 to 60 in 3.3 seconds. $127,000, I think, for the RS6, 125 plus, you know, shipping and stuff, and then like 127 for the RS7. So not cheap, but these are two insanely quick, insanely capable cars. They just, I mean, we hit the roads around Napa and we drove out to the coast, and the RS6, I mean, it looks big, but it definitely does not feel big. It drives like a genuine sports car. Like, it's just so sharp and so quick. The steering is so accurate, and it has standard air suspension you get on both of them, which is really good. You can actually notch it pretty far in the comfort direction, so you can drive really, really comfortably in that car over a long time, and then notch it up in the RS2 driving mode to be really aggressive, or you can get the dynamic ride control on either the 6 or the 7. My review tomorrow is going to be on the RS7 with the dynamic ride control, and it is a very different experience if you opt for the fixed springs with the I don't know off the top of my head exactly what the technical stuff is, but it's a different experience. I think you would actually want to go just for the air springs because of their ability to go down to comfort when you want them to be comfortable, versus just all out aggression all the time, like really, really harsh ride with dynamic ride control. But either way, like just really good, really good cars.
That was the thing that I couldn't believe most about the last time I was in an RS6. It had the 22-inch wheels. It obviously wasn't a performance, but it had the 22-inch wheels, and it was so comfortable when you wanted it to be. It was amazing. I couldn't believe how much compliance the Audi built into that car.
Yeah, so, I was surprised too.
So obviously, I've not driven this yet because the first drive was just last week. But the last time I drove an RS6, I kind of felt the same way I did about the RS5. It just feels a little bit heartless to me relative to an AMG. You know, it is immensely capable, and it is powerful. It is agile. It is technically very good to drive, but I never really got like the fun factor out of it. It feels a little bit analytical to me at times.
Yeah, I get that. It's not like the most thrilling car from a feel standpoint, right? But it is technically really good. Mm-hmm. It definitely has something to it, though. Like it is fun to drive. It's just it takes a little bit to sort of understand how this car sort of works, and I don't know. It's a weird one.
So Eric Nefron has a question. Jeff, has Audi done anything to update its interiors? Like, I think that we know just from their normal product cadence that yeah, the interiors are being kind of iterated. but is there any, was there anything brand new about the interior of the RS6 that you
yes had? So they had a new design package that you get on either one. Mm-hmm. With you get gray, red, or blue. Those are the three colors you can pick from, and they all sort of have a little bit of variation. The blue one is actually really interesting, and I don't know why they did only blue and not the red. So the blue goes all out. You can get a blue weave sort of carbon on top of the dash. There's like a shelf on the passenger side dash that's just covered in carbon. Mm-hmm. And it has a blue weave. You get blue seat belts, you get blue RS logos in the back and the seat backs, which is really cool. Or you can just go for the red and the gray, which just has sort of like red accents and gray accents. You can only get the blue seat belts, or you can only get the colored seat belts with the blue, which I thought was interesting, but I think that's the way to go. Yeah, that's the red there, which is pretty cool. But otherwise, I mean, it's got the same screens, basically the same setup you'll find in most of the upscale Audi cars, the RS cars. So nothing like crazy in that respect, but just a little bit of design difference.
I'm really curious, too, whether or not. So I it's stuck with me for years, but being at the launch of the last Volvo V90, which was like tagged on to another program. I was amazed. So there was, you know, brand new. They're just bringing to the car to the U.S. And they said that they fully expected it to be a car that was going to sell in like double digits per month. Right. So they knew out of the gate that the non-cross-country version of that wagon, which was beautiful. I don't think anybody would argue with me in saying like one of the more stunning wagon designs I've seen in a very long time. Great, great car to drive. Very safe and all that, but nobody was going to be interested in it at all. Did Audi talk about that? Like, is this going to be essentially kind of a, I don't think it's a limited edition car, but is it going to feel like that because of the tiny volumes or?
Yeah, I asked them if it was going to be limited production, because I know initially when they brought them to the US, I want to say it was limited to like 1500 or something really, really small initially. But they said, no, it's not going to be limited production, but they didn't give me a number, which, you know, they could say no limited production, but who knows really what that means. They're not going to sell a million of them, right? So I was just going to say, I think they know that it's a niche product, right? They have to. They know that they're not going to sell a ton of these. Even the RS7 isn't like a huge selling point, I don't think, just based on the price and the fact that sedans are sort of a dying breed too. I actually think
that the RS6 outsells the RS7, and it might outsell the RSQ8 if I'm not wrong. I think that Audi has been like really surprised with like the enthusiast reception, and obviously it being a 600 horsepower, $130,000 station wagon, of course it's never going to sell like a Q5 or a Q7 would. But I actually think the last time I was talking to someone from Audi about the RS6 specifically, they were like, they just kind of said that, like, yeah, when we launched this, we figured it was going to be like a few excited people were going to be really happy to pay the price for one of these. But they actually saw more of a enthusiast penetration than they were expecting. So,
well, we talked about this on the podcast last night, the Rambling About Cars podcast. I think the timing that Audi found for bringing the RS6 Avant over was really interesting. And I think the car has had a little bit of a halo effect at this stage, you know, because the R8 writing's been on the wall that's going away for a long time. We've all known that the end was near, and then the RS6 came onto the scene, and there was, you know, a really great commercial, like a web thing about it, about all of the fast Avants, and I think this car has really benefited from a long pent-up desire from American Audi fans for fast wagons that, you know, we've all been watching from afar. So I definitely think it's benefited a little bit from like the that halo of like, you know, being really cool and like being really different and being incredibly fast and cool to look at.
I would be way more excited about seeing one of these on the street than an R8. I love the R8. I think it's fantastic and beautiful, but like this would feel far more rare than seeing an R8, even around little old Ann Arbor, Michigan, right? Like that's a car that I see every once in a while. I don't think that I've ever seen one of these. So
yeah, it doesn't necessarily feel as special to drive as an R8, right? Sure. The R8 has a very unique experience that makes it an R8, right? And that's been one of their, that's been a hugely successful supercar in the realm of supercars of the past decade. But yeah, to your point, I think the RS6 Avant is more interesting just to look at. Like it's more of a head turner. And I think as Brandon pointed out, having it as the halo, quote unquote, makes a lot of sense in a weird way because Audi has this history of wagons, right? And even though they're not going to sell a million of them like they used to, people know that history and they like that history. And I think people just, there's an enthusiast market there that does love wagons. So I think it still makes a lot of sense as sort of their top end car, especially now with the R8 on the way out.
Well, and with BMW kind of teasing that they're bringing back the M5 Touring, I think that Audi is probably going to stay committed and do, you know, whether it's RS6 e-tron Avant or a still non-electrified or non-fully electric next generation A6 RS6. I don't think that Audi's going to give up on this market anytime soon, because now there's going to be some genuine like one-on-one competition. Before it was pretty much the V60 Polestar and then this. And now there's actually going to be like a proper six-figure, 600-plus horsepower station wagon on the market.
The disrespect for the E63 in this room.
Is the E63 still built?
I don't think they've said they're not doing another one. It's out of production right now because the E-Class is out of production.
Then you have like the Sport Turismo, which is arguably the best-looking wagon you can buy that's still on sale. I think that it's weird, too, like, Is it cyclical? Like, have we reached the point where wagons are cool again? Are people getting tired of SUVs? Are we like sort of inching into that space where like old is new again and people want to wear 90s clothes and drive station wagons? I don't know.
Yeah, everybody kind of hates the vehicle that their parents drove, right? Is sort of the thing. The problem is like SUVs are so much more ubiquitous now than station wagons were, like when I was a kid in the 80s, and people grew up hating station wagons, right? So
not like an exclusively mom car the way that an SUV or yeah, it's not as minivan was.
Too much of a broad base, but we have a few minutes left. I want to hit, Kyle put it up on screen, but a non sequitur from George, off topic question. Do you think four-door sedans are coming back now that Ford is reviving the Taurus? So I would start by saying these are probably independent thoughts. I'm looking now. Maybe you guys are more up to speed than I am. I know that they're like there's a Taurus for other markets. I don't know that we can say for sure that Ford is reviving the Taurus, but maybe I missed some news there. That part of it aside, and Ford driving a sedan, you know, a new love for sedans aside, like, do we see any? Have you guys heard any? Had any conversations about four-door sedans becoming a thing again?
I know. You know, back to Audi, I know they're still kind of committing with that A6 e-tron. The next generation A6 is going to have a fully electric variant, and they're still kind of remaining committed. They did the, what was it, the Audi Grand Sphere concept not long ago, which was a, you know, like a very heavily futuristic A8 e-tron iteration. So I think that there's always going to be some market for four-door sedans in like the really premium space, you know, like people are going to want to be seen getting out of a sedan, not an SUV. But I don't know about commodity cars. I know that the Taurus is going to be Middle Eastern market only. It's the rebuild, the new one. Refresh that was just revealed. Mm-hmm. So hard to say.
Well, you have Volkswagen ID7 too, right? Just Volkswagen Group in general seems like they still think sedans are big enough sell that they're building brand new ones with electric powertrains. So I think there's a market. I don't know if sedans will ever fully disappear or really get to a niche that the wagons are, but I don't know. There's I'd like to see more electric sedans. We haven't seen enough of those yet. We've seen a good amount of electric crossovers, but I think more electric sedans would make the market pretty interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to count it. Like I said, I don't think sedans ever really went anywhere. Like, sure, they are no longer the dominant form of transportation, but Honda and Toyota would certainly tell you that they sell plenty of them every month these days, despite it was famous and big news for a while when brands were kind of retreating from sedans into SUVs, but I don't think that has ever meant that the buyers have gone away. It's kind of a segment that, at least in the mainstream cars, the Japanese just own right now, and I think are happy to own and be profitable with. So interesting question. Time will tell. We can see what happens with the show. You're right. The Audi RS is not an EV. We're talking about it because on occasion we just feel spicy and we combine the podcast to talk about both electric vehicles and ICE vehicles for both the Motor One and the Inside EVs audience. So we're really happy to have you guys tune in. We would love for you to like and subscribe on the YouTube channel. Download the audio podcast if that's your thing. Check us out. But by all means, if we start talking about a car that you're not interested in, we'll answer your question off air. See you the next time. All right, guys, I don't know if we left anything on the table. Lots of good conversation today. Thanks again for everybody in the comments being so active and keeping us on our toes. We will be back again next week, Thursday at 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific time, talking about, who knows, the exciting
Rolls-Royce Spectre.
Oh, there we go. Little teaser. Mr. Turkus was
that's in a good one.
Speaking of EVs.
There's your EVs.
You want an EV.
300 pounds.
How about a 78,000 pound super luxury SUV or EV?
$1 million and it's yours.
Woo! Can't wait. That's exciting. All right. But yeah, thanks everybody for watching and listening. Really happy to have you around, and we will talk to you again next week. Thanks so much.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.